Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies.
Hello, and welcome to the latest in the OIS podcast series. My name's James Henderson. I'm chairman of the GAS programme. This is the 23rd in our series of analysis of the impact of the Russia-Ukraine war on global energy markets. And just to date stamp this podcast, we're recording it on the afternoon of the 5th of December. With me, as usual, I've got my colleagues and friends, Mike Fullwood and Jack Sharples. Welcome, gentlemen, to the podcast again. And we'll be talking about gas flows into Europe. We'll be talking about prices, and we'll be talking about demand in Europe as well. But I'm going to start, if I may, with you, Mike. Could you give us a little update on what's been happening to prices over the last couple of weeks since we last spoke?
The current quote for the sort of month ahead TTF price is about 135 euros a megawatt hour. That's as of 15 minutes ago. That's about the same sort of levels it was bouncing around on Friday. Thursday, price had spiked up quite sharply, up to about 100, mid-150s, before sort of coming back down. I think that was in sort of anticipation of sort of the cold weather seemed to be the main effect on that. Price had been moving up until the last week of November, around about just over a week ago or 10 days ago, they were around about sort of the mid-120s, and they've sort of been working their way up a little bit, sort of from the lowish levels that we saw in sort of late October. So they are sort of a little bit above those levels in terms of the month ahead price. In terms of the sort of differentials, and what we are seeing now, because obviously a lot of the story through the summer months was the disconnect between NBP and TTF, and between the LNG Northwest Europe price and TTF. We have now seen, really, since on a month ahead basis, since the beginning of November, NBP and TTF come back together. It's clearly largely in anticipation that actually the maximum flows out of the UK in terms of capacity would not continue, so that potentially could be some reverse flows from the EU to the UK, although that's not happened. Interconnect was down for maintenance. On a day-ahead basis, the difference have narrowed, but NBP is still slightly below sort of TTF, but certainly the wide differential has gone away. In terms of the LNG price, that differential is still there. That's between Northwest European LNG price and TTF. Even with Eemshaven coming on, which has provided sort of additional LNG capacity, they're still pretty much running sort of flat out. The Eemshaven was down for some brief maintenance as well. So I think until we see the German terminals come on, and I think one's supposed to be coming on sort of very shortly, although some bad weather may have delayed it. Until we see those coming on in volumes, then it's quite likely that the LNG TTF discount will sort of continue. And even the German terminals could fill up quite rapidly, because we'll come on to the LNG market soon. But yeah.
So just a couple of things to sort of dig into there. Just to be clear for listeners, the differential between NBP and TTF has disappeared because essentially the infrastructure constraint has gone. Once the UK stops exporting at full capacity, essentially that infrastructure premium goes away. Is that right?
Yeah, so we're certainly the month ahead is the expectation it's happening, and they're still almost back up to flying at capacity again now. So in the very short term, but there's a clear expectation that there will be some spare capacity effectively in the interconnector and BBL to export to Europe. A month or two ago, the forward curve was showing NBP above TTF. That's now gone. So they're sort of bouncing around each other at the moment. I think the market's not sure whether the UK will import from the EU or the EU will continue to import from the UK. Jack, you may want to add something on that.
Yeah, I think just to bring in my favourite subject here, storage, I think that is definitely an element here as well. Since mid-November, we've seen Europe-wide a switch to net storage withdrawals. Now, that obviously effectively adds supply to the continental European market, whereas the UK obviously has no substantial seasonal gas storage. So that does change the calculus a little bit in terms of how well supplied the two markets are.
Okay, great. Thanks for that. And the second thing I just wanted to raise with you, Mike, is the differential between the LNG marker in Northwest Europe and TTF, what is that now in euros per megawatt hour? And how does that compare with the kind of cap logistics described by the EU when they came out with their price cap last week?
Okay, I knew you were going to ask that in euros a megawatt hour. I've got it in dollars a million BTU, but it's different. It's about $10, which I think if you multiply it by roughly three to take out exchange rate and the megawatt hour MMBTU, that's sort of around about 33 euros a megawatt hour is the differential. So I think the EU cap was 58, which I've no idea how they come up with any of their numbers. But anyway, it's well below that differential. So 58, I guess, is almost $20 a million BTU. I'm not sure it's ever been that wide, but it has on the odd day or two, yeah.
It's interesting to note anyway, isn't it, that differential, wide as it may be, is still way below what would have triggered the EU price cap. So it's just, I guess, just worth noticing that point. I mean, are we still seeing a situation, Mike, where LNG tankers are sort of floating around the Atlantic Basin waiting for a home, or are they starting to redirect now?
Well, I think there are less homeless ones now. I think that's the what we saw in the full November numbers was a big surge again of LNG into Europe. I mean the figures were, you know, well up on the November the previous year, almost double, and we're actually looking at the numbers. I think about 16 billion cubic meters of imports in November in the wider Europe, including Turkey, and that seems to be a record level, even higher than January 2022, which was the previous record level. So it looks as though a lot of those waiting to come into Europe managed to find some slots in the European market, and managed to offload. I think we've seen that in the charter rates as well. The charter rates have been coming off in effect as there seems to be a little bit less LNG in floating storage now. So there's more tankers moving around.
OK, well, that brings us nicely on to kind of discussion of supply into Europe. So, Jack, let me come to you. Let's go to our perennial sort of discussion of Russian supplies. What's happening with overall Russian supplies? Has there been much movement in the last few weeks?
There's been, I would say within the boundaries of the limited volumes that we're now getting from Russia. Let's not forget that back in the spring, in the immediate aftermath of the Russian invasion of Ukraine, we briefly ticked back above 350 million cubic meters per day, and then saw over the course of several months during the summer that flow, that daily flow to Europe, drop and drop and drop and drop, and eventually, with the closure of Nord Stream at the beginning of September, we fell below 100 million cubic meters per day, and we haven't been back above that since. We've been bouncing around between a low of around 50 million cubic meters per day at the beginning of November, back up to where we are now, which is closer to 80, maybe 85 million cubic meters per day. And that is pretty well 50-50 split between the Ukrainian transit route and the Turkish stream transit route. So I would suggest that that increase over the course of the last 4 weeks, 4 or 5 weeks, has really been driven by Gazprom's European counterparts nominating up under their long-term contracts.
Okay, interesting you mentioned that rebound, because of course the big concern is that particularly the Ukrainian route might be under threat. And I think there are a couple of reasons why that might be the case. There's the risk of a Naftogaz arbitration being taken as a reason for sanctions by Gazprom. And then there's the whole question of supplies to Moldova. Can you just talk us through where we are with both of those? Let's start with the Naftogaz arbitration. What's the situation there?
So the Naftogaz arbitration has its roots in the fact that Naftogaz effectively acts as a middleman between Gazprom and the Ukrainian TSO, TSOUA. So Gazprom's long-term transit contract is held with Naftogaz, and then Naftogaz books the capacity with the Ukrainian TSO. Back in May, force majeure was declared on one of the two interconnection points on the Russia-Ukraine border by the Ukrainian side, saying that they'd lost control of it. They asked Gazprom to increase the flows on the remaining route at Sudsha. Gazprom declined to do so and proportionally reduced their payments under the transit contract, which is a ship or pay agreement. And so the result of that is that Naftogaz is pursuing commercial arbitration against Gazprom. Intriguingly, on the day of the explosions on the Nord Stream 1 and 2 pipelines, Gazprom put out a press release effectively threatening that if Naftogaz continues with the arbitration case, that they could find themselves under sanction by the Russian government on the grounds that that long-term transit contract is signed under Swedish law, and the place of arbitration, if you like, was declared to be Switzerland, both of which the Russian government declares to be unfriendly countries and considers that Gazprom would not get, as they can see it, a fair hearing. So that's one issue. There's no particular time frame around that at the moment. We don't have any dates to look forward to. So it really is the case that if there's going to be any movement on that, then it could be just sort of a unilateral action from the Russian side rather than in response to any particular development of that case during the coming winter. Now, with Moldova, it's a bit of a different question. Gazprom's dispute there is rather with the Ukrainian TSO, TSOUA. Essentially, what seems to be happening is that Russian supply destined for Moldova, not all of those physical volumes that were delivered across the border from Russia into Ukraine, were coming out the other side across the border from Ukraine into Moldova itself. Moldova Gas has no complaints about this. What seems to be happening is that before winter began properly, Moldova Gas was seeking to use Ukrainian gas storage facilities, and so putting the gas into Ukrainian storage, moving the gas from Moldova back into Ukraine by virtual reverse backhaul. So that explains the differential. Gazprom accused TSOUA of effectively stealing the gas. It's also accused Moldova of not paying for everything that it owes. And so Gazprom set a deadline of the 28th of November, saying that if the issue wasn't resolved by then Gazprom would start proportionally reducing the flow of gas into Ukraine at Sudzha by the amount that it claims is missing from the volumes destined for Moldova. In the event, on that date, Gazprom declared that the issue was for now resolved and that Moldova Gas had paid what it owed, but said that it reserves the right to cut off or curtail supplies at any time. So that does remain an issue hanging somewhat like the sword of Damocles over Ukrainian transit.
Okay, right. So we'll have to wait for both those issues then. Let's talk a little bit about the other sources of supply. So from a Norwegian perspective, Baltic Pipe has started up and is ramping up. Is that having any particular impact on overall supplies?
So it's not really lifting overall supplies. The Baltic Pipe was inaugurated weeks ago, but actually only entered into full operation on the 30th of November due to a bit of a delay in finalizing the connection between the Norwegian pipeline section and the Danish receiving terminal. Since then, we've seen the Baltic Pipe flows ramp up to around 16 million cubic meters per day, but that hasn't really resulted in any net addition of Norwegian supply to Europe of that magnitude. Instead, what we've seen is a bit of a dip in flows on other routes, specifically on the Europipe 2, from which the Baltic Pipe is a spur. So I think, you know, the sense that we have is that there isn't a whole lot of spare Norwegian capacity in terms of production, and that up until now, that production has pretty well matched the capacity of Norway's export pipelines. Now it seems like we've got a little bit more sort of wiggle room, if you like, a bit of spare capacity on the pipelines relative to Norway's production capacity. So we still think that roughly 350 million cubic meters per day would be the maximum that we would see from Norway through the coming and through the present winter. As it stands, we're somewhere closer to about 330 as a result of some last bits of ongoing maintenance.
Okay, well, I mean, talking of countries flowing at capacity, let's talk about North Africa and Azerbaijan. Anything much to say there? I mean, or we're just kind of flows continuing as best they can?
Well, I think with Azerbaijan, no news is good news. So the Trans-Adriatic pipeline continues to flow at full capacity. The flows on the border between Turkey and Greece along that route remain at just over 30 million cubic meters per day, and long may they continue to do so. Any European talk of doubling that capacity is really not for the very near future. It would require not only significant infrastructure upgrades, but also from the Azeri perspective, new long-term contracts to underpin the investment. So we'll have to wait and see on that one. In terms of North Africa, the Algerian flows to Spain have kicked up again since the beginning of December, rising from 20 to close to 30 million cubic meters per day. So that's good news for them. Conversely, the flows to Italy, which is mostly Algerian, but also some Libyan flows, have been incredibly volatile over the last couple of months. And they've really been bouncing around sort of between 60 and 90 million cubic meters per day. And that volatility has continued sort of in recent days. So we're just going to have to wait and see really at what level they settle down. But certainly Sonatrach is promising a notable year-on-year increase in its exports to Italy. But let's see how that pans out during the remaining weeks of the calendar year.
Okay, and we talked a little about LNG earlier. What about LNG send-out? Has that increased? I mean, you mentioned the new terminal coming on. Has that increased send-out?
Yes. So we've seen really a dramatic increase since August, which was the low point of around 330 million cubic meters per day of LNG send-out in Europe, as I define it, the EU27 plus the UK. That rose to 375 million cubic meters per day in October and then jumped markedly to around 450 million cubic meters per day in November. And in fact, in recent days, has even surpassed 500 million cubic meters per day. So that is a really substantial volume hitting the European market. That is, you know, significantly higher than the 330 million cubic meters per day that we're getting from Norway at the moment. If you layer on top of that something close to 100 million cubic meters a day from North Africa, that takes you to around 430. Layer on the 30 million cubic meters per day from Azerbaijan takes you to 460. And then the remaining sort of 80 odd million cubic meters per day from Russia takes you to about 540. So that really shows the scale of the LNG imports at the moment. If send-out is around 500 million cubic meters a day, but total European pipeline imports are around 540, then that really shows you the scale of what's being achieved at the moment in terms of LNG supply.
Okay, interesting. Mike, let me come back to you then on this whole question of LNG supply. Where is it all coming from? And are suppliers kind of kicking up output, or is this just Europe sucking yet more away from everywhere else?
It's a little bit of both. I think what we've seen on the sort of LNG import side is a sort of continuation of what's been happening this year. I mean, if you look in the first 11 months, then Europe, the wider Europe, including Turkey, is up 57.5 billion cubic metres. Total supply is up about 25.5 billion cubic metres. Therefore, Europe's sort of sucking something like sort of 30 plus billion cubic metres away from the rest of the world. The Asian markets have been pretty buoyant as well until the last couple of months. They were very strong in the first sort of 8-9 months of the year, but the Thailand's weakened a little bit more recently. They're still up year on year. Then everything else is sort of flat apart from India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, which is looking even weaker as we go into December. The price effects there. Central South America with the hydro being sort of back up, that's still pretty weak. And then the big story is China is still down almost 20.5 billion cubic metres in the first 11 months year on year. What was noticeable, though, with China was November was up about a couple of billion cubic metres on the previous sort of monthly average for the 9 months prior to that. So it's running about 8.5 BCM now. And December looks as though it'll be strongish as well. All that's still well below what China was doing last year in November, December. December was a pretty strong month for China, Japan, Korea, Taiwan last year, but their volumes are still running sort of below that. So there are signs of some sorts of changes in the market a little bit, with China looking for a bit more, though less than the previous year, but Europe still piling the LNG in like there's no tomorrow.
Okay, it's interesting. I mean, the fact that, you know, China is bouncing back a little, is this a harbinger, do you think, of what, you know, could happen if the lockdowns are fully lifted, and if we have a cold winter, or if there's, you know, a significant economic upturn next year?
Well, I guess to say is that even a dead cat has to bounce, doesn't it? So it's a little bit of just coming back from extremely low levels. But obviously some of the lockdowns were sort of lifted, so economic activity may have been rising a little bit, and there's maybe some element of sort of getting things ready for the potential for winter, getting the LNG tanks sort of stocked up. but it is still well below last year's levels. But, you know, obviously the policy on COVID now may well be changing in terms of more relaxed flexibility on that, which may sort of bring activity sort of back up again. But I'm not sure we're looking at the sort of 15-20% growth rates we're getting out of China prior to COVID and certainly before the 2021 bounce back. But some growth is certainly now expected in China. If it did go back to its old pattern of growth, that could spell a lot of trouble for the LNG markets next year, notwithstanding the fact that we're looking at a bit more supply coming on.
But elsewhere in Asia, in the developing world particularly, high prices still undermining demand, basically.
Especially in India, Pakistan, Bangladesh, and seemingly now in places like Thailand as well, which were bulking at paying sort of the high spot prices to top up their the generally oil index contracts. So there's certainly a little bulking at that. I think in Central South America, it is more the hydro's come back in a strong way, and Argentinian gas production has been up, so they've not needed the quite as much LNG as before. But yes, I mean, Brazil was suffering from the high spot price as well, but it's been buying a lot less LNG this year.
Okay, well, look, Jack, let me come back to you then, and just let's round off the podcast with the discussion about storage and kind of overall demand. So we've heard about supplies coming in, a lot more LNG, as you've said, sort of pipeline supplies being relatively stable. What's been the effect on storage? I mean, when we last spoke, we were still injecting. Is that still the case, or have we finally got to a stage where gas is being withdrawn from storage as well?
So we have finally tipped over. So I would consider the point at which we start to take gas out of storage rather than inject it to be effectively the start of winter for the European gas market. And we hit that on the 14th of November. I mean, I should say that continuing to inject right through to mid-November is unprecedented in the European market. And when we started to withdraw, so the sort of the 14 days between the 14th and 27th of November inclusive, we averaged withdrawals of about 120 million cubic meters per day. So it wasn't particularly dramatic. But what we've seen in recent days as the temperatures have dipped is that since the 28th, maybe the 28th of November through to the 3rd of December, which is the most recent data that I have access to, those net withdrawals jumped to just over 400 million cubic meters per day. So that's really a sign that things have shifted on the European market. But I would say that storage stocks peaked in mid-November at about 99.95 BCM. So that was pretty good going, really. That was effectively full. And actually, as of the 3rd of December, we've still got more than 95 BCM in storage. So that does leave us in a pretty robust position to start the winter. But of course, the big question is what happens going forward? Is it going to be a cold winter? What is LNG supply to the global market going to look like? What's LNG demand in the rest of the world going to look like? Are we going to see any interruptions in pipeline flows, particularly the Russian flow via Ukraine? All of these things could come together and have a real influence on the rate at which we take gas out of storage. And of course, the quicker we take it out of storage, the less we'll have at the end of winter, and the more has to go back in the summer of 23.
Indeed, and I guess we're watching that kind of total at the end of winter, aren't we? And if it's anywhere, I guess, below 40, we know we're in trouble. Somewhere between 40 and 50 is kind of, I guess, what we're aiming for. So final question for you then, Jack. When we pull these numbers together, what does it tell us about what European demand has been doing, is doing right now, relative to 2021?
Well, I think what's been very clear throughout 2022 is that monthly demand, so this is a top-down estimate of demand, which is effectively production plus imports plus net storage withdrawals, that has been declining from about April. If we take it versus the previous five-year average, so 2017 to 21, in April, April 22, then this implied demand was about 97% of that average. That figure fell. We got down to about 80% by August, September, and fell to a low of 72% in October. I think by the time we got to October, we were looking at a combination of high prices suppressing industrial demand and exceptionally mild temperatures limiting gas demand for space heating, combined with, I would say, some changes in consumer behavior to try and save energy a bit, turn the thermostat down, maybe not put the central heating on quite so early. In November, that has bounced back a little bit. So my figure is about 74% of the average for the previous 5 years. And I think that over the coming months, really the temperature will be a pretty key factor in that in terms of gas demand for space heating. And again, prices, wholesale prices, as an influence on industrial gas demand and how quickly that bounces back. So at the moment, we seem to be pretty well on track for a substantial year-on-year decline in gas demand. But obviously, winter could change everything.
Okay. Well, finally, Mike, let me come back to you. We've had a question from a listener, you'll be surprised to hear. The question is about what's going on with Russian LNG, because obviously pipeline supplies are down, but it's been noticed that Russian LNG continues to flow. Just briefly, can you talk us through what the story is with Russian LNG, whether a lot of it's still coming to Europe, or is it just a kind of sales to global market? What's the story with Russian LNG?
Yeah, it's a bit of both. I mean, LNG supply from all corners of the world has been increasing this year. Obviously, the US has led the charge. It's only really in Nigeria, Algeria, Egypt, where flows have been down. So Russian LNG is up compared to 2021. On the supply side, a lot of that's to do with the Sakhalin plant, where there was heavy maintenance in 2021. There's been none this year, so just arithmetically, they've been sending more out. Yamal's also up as they sort of revert back to full capacity. So, yes, more Russian LNG has been coming to Europe, but then more LNG from everywhere has been coming to Europe. The Russian share actually has probably gone down because the US share has gone up enormously. So I think it's just a matter of the supply side push that everybody wants more LNG and then everybody wants more Russian LNG, including a lot of EU countries who have been quietly importing it.
And the flow has been coming basically via European counterparties, really. I mean, Total Energies and you know, others taking Russian LNG as part of contractual obligations.
Yeah, and Novatek directly. So Novatek are a big seller in the market. So it's, a lot of it is uncontracted Russian LNG. But, you know, I think the North West Europe terminals will take whatever LNG they can get at the moment. So.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you for that. And thank you to our listener for their question. If you have any questions, then please do drop them on a line to info@oxfordenergy.org and we'd be happy to answer them. But in the meantime, thanks very much, Mike. Thanks, Jack, for your input today. Thanks, everyone, for listening. Please take care of yourselves and goodbye.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. You can find other podcasts, as well as our written research, on our website at www.oxfordenergy.org. If you would like more details about our energy transition, gas, oil, electricity, or China research programs, then please contact us at information@oxfordenergy.org.